Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Standing Room Only podcast. Ben Standing here. Yes, I cover the Washington Commanders for The Athletic, which means I am gearing up for Sunday night's huge game at FedEx Field against the New York Giants. Should be a pretty interesting game. I can't say it'll be a great game. I can't even say it. Somebody's going to win based on what happened the last time these two teams played, but I can say there's a lot of anticipation going into this one for sure because of what it means in the playoff chase. The winner, assuming there is one, takes the lead over the opponent, and their percentage chances of making the playoffs go up dramatically. To discuss the game itself, I'm joined today by my colleague at The Athletic, Charlotte Carroll, who covers the New York Giants. We got into kind of where both teams are at this stage, some of the keys for the game, and just sort of also like kind of taking a look back at expectations from the beginning of the year. It's funny, right? Because, well, we'll get to that in a second, but it's funny to sort of see where things are at and compared to where we all maybe thought things were going to start in the beginning of the year. We'll get to all that in a moment. Here on the podcast, which of course you can find iTunes, Spotify, or anywhere you do your podcasting. And if you subscribe to The Athletic, you can also get the podcast ad free. Of course, please subscribe to The Athletic. New article out today about the importance of making Daniel Jones play quarterback. You'll see what that means. Basically, don't let the running... They'll let his running run rampant, and that will help Washington's causes significantly this week. Of course, you can follow me on Twitter at Ben Standing. Let's just get into this here before we get into my conversation with Charlotte. The playoff situation is becoming increasingly good for Washington. How good? Well, here's how good. Thursday night, the Seattle Seahawks, the other team right behind Washington and New York, lost on Thursday night to San Francisco, meaning no matter what the result of Sunday night's game, Washington and New York will remain in the 6 and 7 seeds in the NFC. You know, obviously, the winner will be the 6th, the loser the 7th, but that's where we're at. With only 3 weeks to go, Washington would be in one of the top 7 playoff spots. Things have really gone well for Washington since they last played. The Giants, of course, lost to the Eagles last week. The Seahawks have lost their last two games. So it's going nicely for Washington, but that's hardly the same as suggesting this is a wrap, that they are in with a loss. They would be just a half game ahead of Seattle. The Detroit Lions, if they win, and they've been doing a lot of that lately, would also be a half game back with 3 to go. And you look ahead to next week, San Francisco, Washington will be there on Christmas Eve. And the 49ers, it's really impressive, even without Jimmy Garoppolo, are continuing to look like a legit contender in the NFC. Brock Purdy, the seventh round pick, the final player picked in the 2022 draft, has been wildly impressive and poised for a guy who's a rookie, let alone, like I said, the guy picked last in the draft. But it's their defense that is, you know, the difference maker, really imposing, and it's going to be a huge challenge for Washington next week. We'll deal with that after this game. As far as the injury report, look, obviously I'm talking to you ahead of Friday's practice. That's where we'll get some definitive answers. I would say of the players who are listed as limited, it's about six or seven guys. I feel pretty confident about most of them playing. The big wild card is Chase Young. You know, we don't need to get into that too much. It's kind of the same deal. He basically is, it's up to him to, or it's up to somebody over there to determine whether he is going to play. The messaging is kind of all over the place. We spoke to Jack Del Rio on Thursday. He said, once we get the green light, we'll be ready to go. And I'm like, well, okay, cool. Who's giving the green light? He's like, well, you have to ask that. You can talk to Ron Rivera about that. It has seemed to me, as I've said now a few times, that the doctors have cleared Chase Young, and really at this point it's just a matter of him feeling confident enough to get out there and play. But when we spoke with him the other day, he said that if he's, you know, kind of told to go, he will, and he's, you know, and he's kind of raring to go. But at the same point, when referencing his knee, said that, you know, sometimes it doesn't always feel right. So it still remains confusing to me. Benjamin St. Just is probably the one everybody's most watching with his ankle injury that kept him out of the last two games. I thought he looked pretty spry at the start of practice yesterday when we were allowed in there. He was doing some cornerback drills, kind of going, you know, running forward, running backwards, some tip drills. He jumped up a couple times on some of those like tip drills. I thought he looked pretty reasonable, but again, you know, we'll have to see what that means from their perspective as he gets ready. Sam Cosmi, Jamin Davis, they look good. And, you know, look, I mean, this is obviously a matchup between two teams that are very close, hence the tie. You know, the momentum, though, is definitely a difference between these two teams. The Giants have dropped a bunch of games in recent weeks after a 6-2 start, whereas Washington, of course, starting 1-4, is now all the way up to 7-5-1, and you know, they're feeling pretty good. I think the locker room has been pretty good this week as well, as it's been honestly most of the year, but nonetheless, I think they've been in pretty good shape. So we will see. I think, of course, people are projecting Washington to get this win. But, you know, I mean, sometimes when you're looking at two even teams and everybody's leaning in one direction, it makes it, you know, this is sort of the epitome of the smell test. Our friend Kevin Sheehan at the Team 980 talks about it. I don't necessarily know what the betting numbers are showing in terms of that, in terms of how much money is being wagered. It does feel like, though, that, you know, everybody's kind of picking Washington. Although my colleague, Charlotte Carroll, not so much, but we'll get to why she thinks the Giants can win. We'll see. It's going to be fun. I think for me, the most interesting part is that this is an anticipated game. At this late into the season, we really haven't had this in some time. Again, I know that 2020 season, there was some of that, but, you know, that one, this feels different, probably because they have a winning record and in part because the NFC is kind of down. What could it mean if they can, you know, keep this going? But we'll see. We don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves. Enjoy the hype going into this game between 2-7 and 5-1 teams coming off a tie in their previous meeting. Should be fun. Let's discuss that. Let's get into where these teams are at on the field and sort of mentally with my colleague Charlotte Carroll, covers the Giants for The Athletic here on the Standard Room Only podcast.
All right. Needless to say, this is the biggest game of the year for the Commanders. And I don't know if it is technically the biggest game of the year for the Giants, but I guess it's got to be because they're in the same boat, tie record, and they're kind of reeling. They need to get a win. So here to explain to us whether that's possible is our New York Giants beat reporter, Charlotte Carroll. First time on the podcast. Charlotte, I appreciate you coming on despite the fact your team is in a bit of a slump but I know you're not. How's it going?
I'm doing good. Thanks so much for having me on. No, this is an exciting time, and Sunday's matchup. I mean, Sunday Night Football, that says it all. It's big, and who would have thought Giants Commanders would be in this slot this season?
Absolutely not. I mean, when the season started, the question was really like, which of these two teams would come in last? And yes, I guess technically that is still the case, but in a very different way. Instead of being last with like 4, 5, 6 wins, perhaps it's, well, can they all make the playoffs? And, but in order for that to happen, one of these teams probably got to win this game. What a weird year. We both have had these very different trajectories. My side started off really slow, and then obviously they've worked it out lately. Only one loss since week 5. You guys, nobody expected much out of the Giants. Hot start, and now it's come back to the norm. Are you feeling like kind of, schizophrenic almost, like with how things have turned so suddenly here?
I don't know. I mean, I think if you look at all the surrounding factors, it was kind of, they were eventually bound to skid in some for like way or another. Just like this roster was outperforming its expectations. It's been really fun, obviously, especially as a first year writer with the Athletic or with the Giants, just kind of getting to cover this and watch this new regime come in and all this talent. But at the same time, it was bound to happen, and the Giants injury situation has not made that any easier. So I think that kind of, you're looking at all the injuries that have happened to this roster. Not that the players will make excuses, but it's kind of just like, okay, this was bound to happen.
The bound to happen part, I mean, that's the reason, like, you know, beginning of the year, there's a lot of questions. Daniel Jones, he always, you know, he's Michael Vick when he plays Washington, but in general, he's been kind of a pedestrian guy, certainly hasn't lived up to the hype of where he was picked in the first round. But then, you know, yeah, new coach, you know, a quasi rebuild across the board. And yet, obviously, the hot start did happen. I've, from the outside, been looking at it as Brian Daboll and his group have done a tremendous job to figure out what they have and make it work. Maybe the schedule was a bit easier earlier than it is now. What do you think was the biggest reason they were able to actually come out so hot that maybe isn't working as well right now?
I mean, I think they got a lot of the talent out of these players. I mean, you talked about Daniel Jones and what they were able to unlock in him. You just see him a lot, him rushing a lot more this season, and the way he's able to kind of scramble around. They really kind of gave him the no holds bolts. I can't even say anything at this hour in the morning. No holds bars. Just kind of, he has the freedom to run. You see him a lot more like comfortable in the pocket and just with the decision-making. But I really think it comes down to the injuries. I don't know if it's so much what isn't working. I mean, you saw a lot more play creativity in the beginning of the season. But I really think the injury issues in the secondary, you've got Adoree Jackson and Xavier McKinney who've both been out. You've had some weird defensive line issues. And then just also, I mean, Saquon Barkley as well, one of those injury issues. While he's not been actually missed time, he was limited this past week with a neck issue. He should be okay this week. So all you Commanders fans, be worried about that, I guess. but Saquon kind of coming back down to preseason has also not been great.
Yeah, it does seem like the Saquon Barkley thing has been a big change. That's what's so funny also, like with the schedule, the way that it is, because of this really bizarre deal that these guys are playing, you know, twice in 3 weeks for you, back-to-back games here. So for our end, we've only seen the Giants during this stretch, whereas, like, you know, Washington played Dallas in week 4, we'll play them again at the last game, played Eagles in week 3, then again in week 10, so there's some separation to this thing. It's like there's no way the Giants could have like changed too much in between these games, and then of course they actually got whacked last week. So it's almost like we've heard this myth about that they had a good start, and now it's like, oh, really? I mean, it doesn't look like a team that's good. But I think if I'm right, you're kind of optimistic about their chances this week, you know, relatively speaking, and think they can pull this off. What gives you the optimism considering kind of what's been going on here?
They've kept every game that they've been in close. It's not the only blowout, true blowout that they've had this season is that Eagles game. And that's one that you like I mean, you're always going to get that one or two big blowouts of the year.
Yeah, sure.
And there's no shame in that Eagles game. I mean, this Eagles team, as you've seen, is leagues above everyone else from what I've seen. And even like Giants kept that Cowboys game close when injuries were really bad in that situation too. So, I mean, you look at what happened in the last game, which was a tie, which I don't even know if I've fully processed that yet, having witnessed. But it was really close, and the Giants really should have won that game. You had that taunting penalty, and then there were some other issues down the road where there's multiple opportunities to win that game. And I think they pull it out, and especially after getting their asses kicked on Sunday. This team has very quickly forgotten that game, and it's all about the Commanders and like the implications of that. And they all know it's a big game. I don't know. What about you, having come off the bye? How are the Commanders kind of approaching this one and having not had to focus on anyone else?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a weird deal. Not only so they had all this momentum, then they get a tie. And I think that, I mean, like, only because they were the one that came back to tie it, I guess you could feel slightly better. Plus it was on the road, but they were kind of what, I don't know what to make of this. And then they all went away for a while for a few days. And then you have to wonder like what's the vibe coming back? We're talking on Thursday morning. So on Wednesday we were in the locker room, and this is the one thing that's been interesting with this group this year is that even when they started 1-4, the vibe in the locker room has been really good. This is a group, it's not a cliche, this is a group that really does seem to like each other. The whole room seems to get along, and that positive vibe has kept up throughout, and it's maintained this week. They seem to be in a really good mood, and there have been some teams over the years I've covered different NBA or NFL where I'd be like, oh boy, these guys are really they're having a little too much fun almost, that they don't seem to be focused. But these guys have been this way all year, and they've been ripping off wins somehow. So I think they're in a pretty good space. I think like you and I, they still haven't processed a tie. Taylor Heinicke told us yesterday, kind of like he said over the break, he was watching some MMA card and the main event ended in a tie. And he was just like, oh, come on, you gotta be kidding me here. What is this?
Even know MMA could end in a tie
or a draw. Yeah. Well, I guess if the scorecards, all kind of come out that way. So at any rate, yeah, I mean, I think they're in a good space, but we'll see. I mean, I think they're relatively healthy. They have like a long list of guys banged up, but everybody practiced yesterday. I don't know the last time they've had a situation where everybody's practiced, since maybe all year. I don't know if that's even been the case. So I think they're in a relatively good space, but you never know for sure until you get out there on Sunday. And maybe they're even a little bit slow out of the gate because of the fact that they had some time off. I think the one thing for me is offensively is how do they deal with the Giants pass rush and the constantly like changing looks that defensive coordinator Wink Martindale kind of throws at teams. They're going to have a new center because Tyler Larson, who was already the backup, got hurt in that Giants game. They're going to go to Wes Schweitzer, who's a former guard now, who's played some center. He's the third string. We still don't quite know who's going to be at right guard. Could be a couple different guys. And to have that kind of change, it's things happen. But against the Giants, that seems like a problem. The Giants had, five sacks in the first game. I think that to me is for Washington, maybe the biggest emphasis as like what they need to pay attention to is how the Giants defensive front was able to attack them last game.
Yeah. I think that you make a really good point there. I didn't even realize with the third string center going to be in there that how big of a deal that is for that defensive line, which is honestly probably the most complete part of this Giants team at the present moment. You have Leonard Williams has missed time, but I think he's been practicing, so hopefully he'll be okay to play on Sunday. But between Leonard Williams, Dexter Lawrence, both of those players, Pro Bowl candidates, and then you've got young pass rushers in Azeez Ojulari and Kayvon Thibodeau, who Azeez is now, this will be his third game back in a little bit. And the two of that duo of Kayvon and Azeez are finally like starting to play off each other in a way that fans were really excited for to see at the beginning of the season. And it's dangerous. I mean, Kayvon almost had that sack in the end zone, or he did that almost had that safety in the end zone in the Commanders game. So you got a reminder of what that is looking like. So I think that's a good point. It's a very dangerous situation.
Yeah, no, it's concerning. The Commanders' offensive line has been the biggest issue for them, pretty much all season, and it's part of the subplot of the constant who should be the quarterback: Taylor Heinicke or Carson Wentz. Among the pro Heinicke arguments is he's far more mobile than Wentz, and with this offensive line, you need some of that to get by. But at the same point, that can't be enough. Like the line's got to do their own part. You know, I'm curious with Dexter Lawrence. I've been writing a lot this year about Daron Payne's situation. He is a true free agent at the end of the year, and there's been all this question: are they going to keep him? Are they not? He's having best year of his career easily. Dexter Lawrence is another one of these guys who this should be a really deep defensive tackle market, even if it's not pure free agents, but guys who are going to get paid because their contracts are, going into the last year of their deal or whatever it may be. Has there been any of that kind of talk about him there? Because you guys have Leonard Williams. I say you guys, you're not the team.
I'm suiting up. You didn't know.
Yeah. you got that four. You get that 40 speed. I know. Don't try to pretend. Leonard Williams already gets paid a ton. And part of the issue is you don't want to pay two defensive tackles a lot of money, just in terms of like roster building. But obviously they're very good, and this is sort of the dilemma that Washington has. Has that been any kind of a thought so far? And either way, how is Dexter Lawrence? It looks like he's having a really tremendous year. How has he been this year?
Yeah, no, I mean, the focus for free, like the roster construction and contract stuff has really honed in on Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley. Like Saquon's going to be a free agent. Daniel, they didn't renew his fifth year option. So that's really taken the spotlight. But then in the background of that, you kind of have these players, someone like a Dexter who's played phenomenally. And like, I think it would make sense to bring back. I mean, you have starting to build this core, and you've got Leo and Dex and then Aziz and Kayvon. I mean, that's starting to show that it's very formidable, formidable group. So it would make sense for me that they bring him back. I know they were talking a little bit about at the bye. That was the only time Joe Shane kind of really got into like that contract negotiation phase a little bit during the season, just because it would make sense. And if I'm remembering correctly, I think he got some offers, especially with the trade line for Dexter, and they wouldn't deal him. I may be remembering this wrong now that it's been so many weeks, so don't completely quote me on that. I would need to look it up. Sure. The seasons all become a blur, but that just speaks like they didn't want to trade him. It was either they didn't want to trade Saquon or Dexter, and I think Dexter, between the discussion of beat writers, it might have come down to Saquon and Dexter. I'm not quite sure 100% who, but he's become invaluable for this team, and he's been so consistent that they cannot take him off the field. I mean, you had Wink Martindale talking about earlier this season, like just how difficult it is to take him off. He's like the Rolls Royce of this Giants defense, was I think the quote. And that just speaks to how they value him.
Yeah, no, I mean, when you have, because it's so funny, these teams, it kind of goes without saying when you tie, but these teams are very sort of on the same level, and same thing with the offense. The argument here for this game is like, hey, if you get ahead of the Giants this week, that's going to put them in a really tough spot offensively, and therefore it's going to take them out of sort of their game plan. It's the same thing here for Washington. It's been just grind the clock, let your defense be as fresh as possible to then play as well as they have been all year, and that's for Washington, led by the two guys in the middle, in John Allen and Daron Payne. Therefore, you figure you want to keep them long-term and make that your basis. But like I said, it's just not always that easy. Teams just don't typically want to pay those guys. But how do you – that's a hypothetical. The reality is you have this guy here. Why would you want to let him let him get away? And it's funny, on the Saquon Barkley front, like on the one hand, running backs are not nearly as valuable, you know, this era compared to, you know, yesteryear when the Giants and Washington had a different team name. When they would play in for NFC East titles, and the running backs were really dominant. And so like, it is interesting with Barkley to see, you know, if that's a decision, Lawrence or Barkley long-term, and Daniel Jones as well, how they play that. Cause no doubt Barkley is the popular guy, right? I mean, he's been the face of the franchise, even when hurt for a bit, but you're really going to pay a running back a ton of money. I don't know.
Welcome to Giants beat writers discussions and the constant questions. We do live rooms every week, and there's always a way. It may not happen till later in the discussion, but there's always a question about free agency that like rotates back to Barkley and to Daniel. And it's, I mean, if I had the answer for this, I would not be a beat writer. I'd be a front office person. But no, it's definitely going to be a tough decision. You speak about the impact that Barkley's had as the face of this franchise and how much will he take. And I think that, again, going back to that, those bi-week contract discussions that kind of like came to head a little bit, they were talking a little bit, but nothing came to pass. And honestly, that might have been a good thing given the slump that Saquon has had. It's not like he's performing like the first half of his season. So we'll kind of see what that ends up being and how he finishes the year. And then same with Daniel. It's just kind of like he's under, both of those players, obviously everyone, are under constant evaluation. And I think as much as we talk about like Saquon's contract this game and the importance of it for playoff implications, this game is going to be the biggest of Daniel Jones's career, no doubt. Prime time, he's 0-9 in. Like, this is just going to be, I mean, another storyline to keep an eye on.
0-9. That's, I mean, but I mean, he's like, I forget what the exact deal was, but the first like 3 years of his career, like, or something like that, he only, or maybe the first couple of years, he'd only won like X amount of starts the team had won, but like 90% of them were against Washington or something like that. It was like, it was an insane deal. I mean, even in the last game, I mean, What the hell? He didn't throw a true incompletion until like deep into the fourth quarter. He's running all over the place. And there was that one deep pass. I think it was the Slayton down the field where Slayton basically dropped it. And that could have, you know, sealed the game for them. And yet he's still viewed as like the ultimate pedestrian, you know, baseline quarterback. I'm actually curious. What was your perception when you got on the beat, because all you hear is how negative Daniel Jones is? Did you think he was going to be the worst quarterback of all time based on the hype and the talk and perception before you got to the team?
Having not paid attention much to the Giants over the last 5 years, basically at all, besides like just like scores and stuff, kind of based on what everyone was saying. So I've actually been really impressed with him. I mean, it's not like I've got a lot to go on, I guess, this being my first season covering an NFL team. But he's done really well, and coaches have really unlocked, like I was talking about earlier, have unlocked what works for him, and they've gotten him more comfortable. That's been another topic among fans, and just kind of like if he had a more talented or a better wide receiving group, like what that would look like. So that's always kind of been like the pieces might not always be there to get the full picture for Daniel, but he's got to do what he can with it. So I don't know. I mean, you see him, it's not like he's having bad games. I mean, the wins haven't been there the last couple, however, since the bye, but he's been playing decently and like connecting with, like you said, Darius Slayton. Like that was on Slayton. Slayton dropped it. He connected with Slayton on an earlier pass, long pass in that game. So I don't know. It's kind of weird to try and evaluate that situation.
Well, also like, you know, Washington has plunked in assets to the receiver room. They paid Terry McLaurin a ton of money lately. I don't think anybody's going to argue about paying him. They gave Curtis Samuel a big contract last year. That was a disaster last year, but this year he's been healthy and he's shown the reason why he's a big playmaker on the field. They spent a first round pick on Jahan Dotson, and he obviously made the big play at the end of the game to tie it, but he's been really, really good all year in between an injury. The Giants spent huge money on Kenny Golladay, massive bust. They draft Kadarius Toney in the first round. That completely doesn't work out. So when you try to, and like that the game for me earlier this year was that Green Bay game that was over in London, right? Or overseas.
Yeah.
And so I'm watching that. I'm like, wait a minute. The Giants leading receiver is a guy who was on the practice squad. Like what is happening here? So like he doesn't have a ton of weapons to work with. The offensive line is good now, but it wasn't very good early in his time. Saquon Barkley was been banged up. So it's kind of like, well, what's he working with? On the other hand, 0-9 is not great. And still doesn't seem like too many people believe in him. And sometimes that can be just reputation takes a long time. It's the same thing here with Taylor Heineke to a degree. Some people, and probably myself included, harp too much on the lack of arm strength. He's not the tallest quarterback ever. And yet they win, and they're winning this year. And nobody can explain why. He makes clutch passes over and over again. But it's so hard to tell, like, what, you know, the chicken and the egg thing to a degree. Is it he really doesn't have it, or the pieces around him aren't helping him? He's not, you know, he's not Aaron Rodgers, but he's good. He's decent. But that's what's so interesting about trying to figure out what level these quarterbacks, right? Really, both for both of these teams.
Yeah, no, it's tough. And I don't know if we'll get an answer for that this year, which is just like,
oh no.
Yeah. I mean, we won't. Like, it's just a weird situation. And with Daniel, it's like the criticism is more coming from the outside. I think those inside, at least like publicly, are obviously endorsing him, and they believe in him to get the job done. And like, you saw comments obviously from Dable at the beginning of the season, and they still stand by what he's been able to do. And it's not like, I mean, Daniel is respected in the locker room. It's not like he's not respected, and he's a good teammate by all accounts. So like, he's doing what he can. So I don't know. Yeah, it's got to be interesting for you getting to watch Taylor this season pull off some crazy, crazy throws, and just an interesting season.
Right. Well, I mean, for him, you know, we got a full dose of him, you know, last year, because Brian Fitzpatrick got hurt in week one, and Heinicke comes in and starts basically the rest of the year. And, you know, it is, you never know what he's going to do. You can't figure it out, which makes a lot of fun. But in terms of, like, you know, consistently winning football games, it's hard to process. And I just said consistently winning football games, and the Heinicke Hive, I can hear them yelling at me, dude, they's lost one start. What are you yelling at? What are you talking about? But when we talk to Rivera or some of the players, how does Taylor do this? They're all like, I don't know. The guy, every game, Rivera's kind of like, well, you know, that's just like Taylor being Taylor. I you know, there's gonna be some crazy stuff, but somehow it kind of works out. And they tried to get an upgraded quarterback for a reason. And that for us is sort of the big question, is how much rope does Taylor Heinicke actually have? The question I asked Ron Rivera this week in his press conference was, what's the difference between, like, you're trying to win this next game, you got to do whatever you can, I get that, but you also, if you make the playoffs, want to give yourself the best chance to compete. And the reality is that, like, in the postseason, you're playing the bigger teams, you're going to have to probably score more than 20 points. And maybe that means going to Carson Wentz. And I hear people yelling at me, but like, Carson Wentz has the bigger arm. He's able to throw, make the chunk plays easier than Heinicke, but also they're not as efficient offensively. And this is such the deal to try to figure out, but you know, at least you guys have one quarterback. I guess there's really no debate about somebody else. By the way, out of curiosity, we'll have time for this later, but what's the deal with Jones? If you had to guess right now, do you think he's actually going to be back? Or do you think this coaching staff and front office after 1 year is going to be like, maybe we need to kind of either restart or find somebody else?
I don't know. I don't know if I've been here long enough to even feel like I can answer that appropriately. I don't know. I mean, not renewing that fifth year option says a lot, I think, about like expectations to begin with. And like the fact that nothing was done over the bye, not that they probably would have made like good progress on that, but it's been a constant evaluation. It's not like they've explicitly been like, this is our guy. So I think he's really got to play out. It really comes down to these last games and what they're going to do with him. And then the like draft class and all of that, and the free agency market, like what are the realistic options that they could do and kind of deal with, especially when they need so many other parts when it comes to draft stuff and things like that. And because that was always like another thing, because they've done so well this season, like a high draft pick isn't really like an option for a high quarterback type of a situation.
Right, same here,
so
yeah.
they've played themselves. I mean, Daniel might've played himself into like sticking around another year just because of that.
No, 100%. Once they started winning, it's like, okay, well, you pissed away the top 10 pick. Are you cool? Okay. Well, you're going to keep going. All right. Well, I guess we'll see where this goes. So I guess that brings it back to this. I mean, that's the fun thing for us, is that Washington has just not had a ton of big games in some time. Even in 2020, when they end up winning the division with a 7-9 record, I think it was a very similar trajectory, slow start, strong finish. But the second half of the year, we're all kind of like, all right, this is kind of cute. I mean, plus it was like the COVID year, it was really weird. And, you know, the you know, no fans, and everybody's kind of just trying to figure out life. But I was like, oh, this is kind of adorable. Look, you know, this division stinks and they're taking advantage of it. But this feels different because they have a winning record and they have been playing, you know, they have a good record over the last, you know, 2 months. And the defense is pretty good. And Brian Robinson's really giving them a strong presence in the ground game. So this is a big game. It really does feel like it. What do you think ultimately for you or for the Giants, as you interpret what they're thinking, what do you think for them is like the biggest key for this game ultimately for them to pull this out?
No, I think it's the rush defense and what they're able to do with that. Also looking at the secondary too, in my opinion, will be key, like stopping those big pass plays and making sure like McLaurin doesn't get away with anything too crazy, given that the difficulties they've had in that secondary. So yeah, those are my two keys. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, like I said before, I think the offensive line dealing with Wink Martindale's constantly changing looks, I think is going to be huge, especially with some of those changes. And, you know, I think defensively, the cornerback Benjamin St. Juice, he missed the last game. He's been out the last two games, plus the bye week with a sprained ankle. He was back at practice yesterday. It was one of the many who was listed as limited. It's kind of funny. He's been out and they played against Marcus Mariota and Daniel Jones, two guys far more known for their legs than their arm. So it's kind of a good situation to have where you don't have, if you have one of your really only two cornerbacks, they have no depth at that position. It's nice to have some quarterbacks who aren't known for throwing. On the other hand, Daniel Jones completed, like I said, basically every pass for most of the game. So, you know, it would be nice to have your best corners out there. So I think if they can get St. Juice out there combined with what they already do up front, I think that will be, you know, make their defense pretty challenging for the Giants to do too much. And, you know, I would probably also say ultimately, if one of these two teams can get a 10-point lead somehow, or, you know, whoever gets ahead early is going to have the advantage and start taking the other team out of their game plan if they can keep it up into the second half, because both these teams are pretty conservative by nature and don't have a lot of, you know, options. I don't know what the over under is for this game, but I would bet the under without even like knowing anything.
I think it's 4.5 last time.
The spread.
The spread.
Yeah, let me see if I can look here really quick to see because it's like, I mean, I guess it could get too low, but when you factor in the weather, I'm sure it's going to be freezing at the game and all that kind of deal. I just don't know. There's going to be a lot of points. I mean, I don't know what you're like. You wouldn't stun me if we're both saying 2017 win, but the team we cover winning would be my assumption.
Yeah, I think this could go. I mean, honestly, will we get another tie is like a realistic question because of how evenly matched these teams feel like they are. And like based on what we saw last or 2 weeks ago, feels like a realistic question. Like unlikely, but it's out there as an option.
Has anyone done the math as to what happens? I mean, I really almost don't want to, just I don't want to like put it out into the universe, but like what happens if in fact they do tie again?
That's a Monday problem if that happens.
we'll wait for Elias Sportsbeer or Austin Mock or Nate Silver or one of these like math people to tell us, well, now according to the numbers, yada yada yada.
Yeah, we'll go to Austin as soon as the game's over if that's the case.
All right, it looks like the over under is about 40.
Okay,
so I would take the under there, but you know, weird things happen. You never know for sure. All right. Well, I assume both you and Dan Duggan are making the trip down here.
Oh yeah, I'm excited. I've never been down there for a game,
don't raise your hopes.
I've heard expectations. I should be very limited. It's not exactly the Dallas Cowboys Stadium, but it's my first trip down there. It's Sunday Night Football. Like, I'll be excited this weekend and then never again when I come back down to DC.
No, I hear you. I mean, I'm still hitting a lot of new stadiums for the first time, and because a lot of them are new, you're like, oh, this is pretty cool. The one like old one this year was like venerable, you know, Soldier Field, and you know, that was cool because that's historic. This is not as good. Even the view in the Giant at MetLife is a lot better too on the side. here, you got the end zone shot. So be prepared, bring some snacks, but you'll be all right. And yeah, it should be fun one way or the other.
I bring snacks. I got to pack snacks. In
my okay. So, I mean, look, this is the important stuff. They actually have like randomness, like granola bars or some candy or some stuff like that. But the main food, look, I'm not complaining. It's free food. Nobody cares. But like, yeah, it doesn't have the reputation for being the best meal you're going to ever have. I'll just say that.
I'm going to pack my snack bag then. I'll make sure that's a focus on Saturday night.
Absolutely. You got to focus on the food. Charlotte Carroll, I greatly appreciate the time. Good luck finishing off the week in the cold. We'll see you down here in a few days, and hopefully somebody wins. Hopefully
it's not asking for a lot.
No, we just need a result. That would be good. Thanks so much. I'll see you in a few days.
Thanks for having me on, and see you Sunday.
Yep.